welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where Smith gives the booms in athletics and sports. This is our last show for January 2023. Hopefully you all have made your plans and working your plans. I hope you didn't start the first week after you said these are the goals that you wanted to make. And I think I mentioned I was reading John Maxwell's book, and he talks about not making goals, but making growth goals. Yeah. So when you look at it that way, you already know that growth is not always comfortable, and so you're prepared for it. Yeah, so let's keep on striving to make 2023 the best me you can be. Okay? So do you have a copy of the latest Significance in Athletics and Sports magazine? Well, go get your copy today from Amazon. We have 4 issues already in Amazon. And then go to our private Facebook group, A Chat in the Garden, and watch Facebook Live replays called Meet the Contributors. Yes. And then lastly, I'm real excited because the 5th issue is in production as we speak. And so I am taking orders for pre-orders now. And you can go get that at payhip.com/seeds of empowerment. Seeds of Empowerment. So payhip.com/seeds of empowerment. So you'll be able to get the first mailings that I get out. All right. You want to be on that. And that has on the cover, it has Alfreda Goff. The legendary Alfreda Goff, and her title of her blog is The Best Role Model. And I'm going to add, the best role model ever. Many of the individuals that you have heard in the garden are mentees of Alfreda, and I am one of them. And so learn how and why she does what she does. So go ahead and pre-order that from, again, payhip.com/seeds of empowerment. And if you're so inclined that you are ready to tell the world about your specialized knowledge, about what you have done well at your institution, what problem have you solved, what program have you created, what do you think that you can share with the masses to duplicate? In other words, what's your intellectual property that you want to, I can't say protect, because when you give out into the world, you're going to have people trying, if you do it well, you have people trying to duplicate. I was talking to a colleague yesterday who has a phenomenal program coming out. And she said, everybody's trying to come out and duplicate. I said, oh, duplicate. Just don't worry about duplication. See if you can partner. And because you go further together. I said all the time, there's no competition in the garden. None whatsoever. Because how you do something is how you do something. And when you share it, your light does not dim. Your light becomes brighter. And number two, if you are ready to make your next move, this is the best place to be able to share your thought process. I just screenshotted from the PDF version an article by one of my clients that I used to share why she should get this particular job. Yeah, because there's a framework. There's a methodology of how she approaches issues. And I believe that she'd be a good match for that opportunity. So this whole process is not just investing and paying to be in the magazine. You get expert marketing from me, how to framework what you do well so it can be duplicated, so it can be monetized. Got another individual's been in the magazine that I have gotten her a speaking engagement, and the individual said they didn't have any money to pay the speaker. I said, okay, but do you have money to buy materials for the attendees? And she says, yes. I said, okay, you need to buy X number of magazines from the individual, not from me, but from the speaking person speaking. All right? So when you join to be a contributor, there's a couple of things I can show you how to make a landing page and be able to sell your magazines, because now you have a product. See, many of the listeners are educators, and they're not necessarily thinking themselves as a brand, and that's okay, because I didn't either. But what I have learned, I'm sharing with you, and you can have another income stream. And that's all I'm trying to do. Now, for those who do have a side piece, this is a place that you do that. This is a place that you educate how and what you do. Look, times are going to get tighter. I just have to tell it to you like it is. However, those who prepare, their ride will not be as rough. And how you prepare for that is to increase your number of income streams. I didn't say income, the amount of busyness that you're in. Because the way this works, you can make money while you sleep off your intellectual property. Because people want to know, how did you do that? How did you navigate that? You know, right now I'm looking for people with specialized knowledge. I'm really looking for individuals that can conduct a workshop on cultural competencies as it relates to officiating. I would have loved to go straight to my group to go find someone who's ever done that, but I didn't have it as of yet. But those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. You know, what is it, something that you have created that is a systematic way, the way you think? One more example. What is it that you want people to say about you when you're not in the room? What do you bring to the table to your university? That's what we want to know. And my last point, I know, you know, we get excited about receiving on the periodical issues from NACTA. And we get so excited about that one little area and that one little box of a person that looks like us. That's one of the main reasons why I publish this magazine. We are not going to sit here and wait for one little spot that comes every quarter. Yeah, yeah. Our whole magazine is filled with women just like you that are listening, who have a specialized knowledge in athletics or sports management. Come get on board. If this is something that you want to be a part of, please inbox me at MoniqueAJSmith@SeizureEmpowerment.info. Again, MoniqueAJSmith@SeizureEmpowerment.info. .info. And just a last little piece. If you sign up to be in this magazine, it will hit the stands in August. So Seawall Foundation is offering media training for student athletes with name, image, and likeness on deck. This is an important training. Candy Waller, the founder, has extensive background with Seawall Sports Entertainment. She, the season is coming to an end, but I'm going to tell you, she's not coming to end with, as it relates to football. She's going to go to the next sport because whenever you want to know what's going down in the DMV, she knows it. And she is in the press boxes, okay? So I like to say that she helps our student-athletes prepare for lights, camera, action so we don't have any sorry Miss Jackson moment. For more information, go to info@seawallfoundation.org. Again, email info@seawallfoundation.org. Hey, speaking of preparing our student-athletes for the name, image, and likeness life, that actually puts them in the professional athlete realm because they're earning income. And one of the things that's really important, they don't even know. I'll just be very honest with you. I got some recent students that I have used at some of my Boo Williams activities, and I said, you need to go pick up your 1099. They didn't know what that was. And these are recent former athletes. And I'm like, okay, they don't know. They don't know. So I would say this. If you're going to do any student-athlete development, you get a tax-prepared person to talk to your student-athletes because they have no clue. I was supposed to have someone speak to my students last semester. But death in the families happened and weather happened and we never get back on track. But I'm just teaching it from an academic standpoint, not talking to the student athletes. So why do I say this? Because the book, Surviving the Lights, a Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse by Tawana Smith, was my foundation for understanding that the curse is getting money and losing money. All right. So when she wrote the book, there was no name, image, and likeness on that. So now it is. And it's still the same thing. Can you imagine? It's a couple of things. Some of the student athletes are getting free to them. Uncle Sam says that you still got to pay on free items, pay taxes on free items. So where don't get that money from? Because if it's worth over $600, you got to pay taxes. And number two is, can you imagine thinking you're so excited about this windfall that you receive, and then you realize you got to pay taxes on it. Even if they get a car just to drive around, if they're going to pay taxes on it. And so that's why you have a tax preparer, just the same as a lawyer or someone going to go find these wonderful deals. And I, even with my student athletes, I've said, okay, many don't say that they are agents or lawyers. They say they're consultants. And I said, well, are they going to, in their fee that they receive, are they going to help prepare taxes for the income that they assist you to get? See, that's the kind of language that you need to be able to say. You're not telling them who to hire. You're telling them that they need to hire. So there's a lot of things such as that, Surviving the Lights, a Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse, by Tawana Smith. And that's on Amazon in three different formats: audio, paperback, and ebook. You need to get this on your bookshelf. I attended a virtual workshop last week, and there was some technical glitches, and so the platform allows you to go to a virtual table room or just to talk, Man, I went in there, and guess who I saw? Alva Amaker. Yes, Alva Amaker, Education and Risk Management Consultant. She owns Vigilant Safety Training Center. We like to say she likes to take policies to practice. And, I mean, every time I talk to Alva, I learn something new or become more aware of something that I should have known. And, look, if you're not even sure that you got all your bases covered as it relates to, let's just say that you do have an athlete that that falls out and needs CPR. Do you have a defibrillator? How do you get one? You know, what grants can you get to get that? You know, when you do the CPR training, does your staff take it seriously? What is the plan? You know, what's the plan? And then how you practice the plan. That's the key. Because if no one even opens and cracks the book, then how do you know what's supposed to happen? Yeah, because you got people coming in the middle of the year, so you just can't count on everybody knowing from your fall meeting. You know, you got people dropping in, hiring and firing. You got to be up on it. So the center has the following training. First responder training, which I just spoke of. Sport and event staff certification. Those are people that wear the yellow jackets. So just because you hire outside entity, they need to know all that the rest of the staff knows. Like, what's the plan if blank happens? So folks need to be certified with your plan, and workspace safety, personal training, and operations. And I would say operations was really key because I hired her to do some work during COVID. Yeah. And I had no clue how to use a Google Doc and how to use a QR code. And, you know, from a marketing standpoint, that was advantageous because then you have the email addresses of all your clients that come to your facilities. And not only, you know, that was the purpose, so in case there was an outbreak, you could tell individuals to go and go get tested. You may have been exposed to COVID. And let's be clear, times ain't, I'm still wearing my mask, people. I don't know about you. But, yeah, some things have been lax a little bit, but you still have COVID breakouts. You do. But beyond that, you know, what other news can you share to those individuals that want to keep them, you know, on your list? And I learned it's all from Ava. Yes, so we can all grow together. So I do know that she does have free assessments to let you be able to test whether you are policy to practice ready, okay? So go to Vigilant, VigilantSTC, okay? It's Vigilant, VigilantSTC.com. Again, we provide resources so that you can grow. This is what we do here in the garden. So now it comes the time to welcome my guest of the hour. And I am excited about this because this, for what I hear, is a legend. Yes. So I am excited to bring Kathy Jordan, the former player development for the Indiana Pacers, to the garden. Welcome to the garden, Kathy.
Thank you. I love that.
Yes, you hear your cheers. Yes.
I love cheers. Yes.
Well,
how
let's
are
just
you?
Tell everyone, I'm doing fabulous. I'm excited because we have been talking for months and months and months, and I'm so excited that you are finally here. But I have had the privilege to listen to you on other podcasts, so I know all about your history. But let's tell all our listeners, this is taken from college to now.
Okay. Well, of course, I came up in an era where women in sports was pretty much unheard of. very few that you saw. So very few role models and mentors. You mentioned Elfrida Goff. She's someone I met a little bit later and who became a mentor. But in college, I went to study physical education. I wanted to be a coach, phys ed teacher and coach. So that was my career goals at that time. I went to Purdue University, and they had it separated. You had a women's program and you had a men's program. And the women's program was more research-oriented, kinesiology. And I really enjoyed that, but I wasn't learning how to, you know, work with students. I wasn't learning coaching. I wasn't learning any of those things. I was learning about sports. I was learning about proper techniques, form, and things like that, but not really about the X's and O's of coaching and working with your athletes. So after my junior year, Purdue opened up the men's program so that women could join and men could also join the women's program. So I switched over to the men's program, and lo and behold, that's where they were learning about athletic training and facility management and coaching. That's everything that we think about, you know, career as far as administration and management that we think of now as sports. And so I got a year of that and really still wanted to teach. And when I graduated, they were letting teachers go here in Indiana, where I'm from. Too many teachers, not enough students at the time. So I had a hard time getting a job and moved into not-for-profit, working with my brother under a large not-for-profit organization here. And eventually the Indiana Pacers got new ownership and they were expanding their staff and were looking to diversify. They didn't have a lot of diversity. They had one African-American male and a handful of females, and that was about it. And got that job, and that's how I got into sports. Thought I'd be there for maybe 2 or 3 years until I could get into teaching so I could, you know, go to that coaching dream. But ended up being there 25 years.
25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a great job.
You look good. You don't even look like you could. Yes.
I was a child prodigy. I was a mere 12, 13 years old. That's what I tell everybody.
Oh, boy. So let's just get to the nitty-gritty. Why did they call you Mother of Player Development?
Well, it goes back. I've always had an interest since. I've always been around the guys because, like I said, when the time I was coming up, it was pre-Title IX. Wasn't a lot as far as women's sports. I did gymnastics. That was what the girls did. A little track and field. But I was always around the boys' sports and the men's sports. And I saw a lot and eventually married a basketball player at Purdue who was drafted. And so I got to see that process. And there was just a lot of things that I just thought were so wrong. And when I ended up with the Pacers, because it was rather funny, my ex-husband and I laugh about it now because I really did not like professional sports, having witnessed what I saw our athletes going through, especially athletes of color. And when I got the job at the Pacers, I started – based on my experience, kind of reaching out to the athletes and their families behind closed doors, under the table. because that was something that was not afforded us when he stepped into the professional world. There's no one helping us. We're right out of college. We know nothing. We know no one. Mm-hmm. We're in a strange city. And we were just pretty much left on our own. And I saw his limited life skills and how much he was relying on an agent and other people. And so when I started working for the Pacers, I did the first player draft. It was Vern Fleming, and he was married with a small child. So I reached out to his wife. I said, hey, I've been where you are. And they were from New York. And I was like, huge culture shock coming to Indianapolis from New York City, because at that time our diversity was little to none. And so I just reached out and said, hey, how can I help you? Let me take you around, show you the different neighborhoods, where to get your hair done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have a lot of soul food restaurants, but let me show you the one that is here. You know, just cultural things like that. And just basically it started off as kind of a welcome wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And it quickly grew into other things, because some of the guys were like, well, geez, you acclimated pretty quickly. Like, how did you do that so fast? And then he's like, oh, there was, you know, girl in the office, she helped out, you know, Michelle, da 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 da, and it kind of blossomed from there. The general manager who put me in the position was the assistant coach at the time, Donnie Walsh, so he was very familiar with what I was doing, even though the front office was not familiar with what I was doing. And when he became GM, he said, hey, I know what you were doing. Thought he was going to fire me, because that was like a no-no. You did not cross that line. And actually, he said, no, I like what you were doing. I saw how it helped. And I want you to continue doing that. We're going to expand it to, you know, the family members. I want you to work with agents and, you know, just whatever people are around the players to help. And that's how it started. No one was doing that. Or mm-hmm. if they were, no one knew about anyone doing that. And when I called the league for different things, they had, they did have Satch. He was doing player programs, but his focus was on getting the guys to complete their college degree. A lot of guys were coming mm-hmm. out at that time 3-6 hours short. So he was trying to get them to go back to school in the off season to get their degree. And that's what the focus was. It wasn't so much life skills and that transitioning into the professional life. So we were the first ones to do that, and that's kind of how it. I got that godmother, mother, you know, some people call me the grandmother, and I go, no. I'm not taking grandmother. I'll take godmother. I'll take mother. I'll take mom. You can call me auntie. But that's kind of how that came, because I would go to league meetings, and I'd get on the soap opera about, you know, what the league owed these guys that I felt they owed them. So a lot of the programs that started developing for the players came out of that. And that's why people call me that.
Well, let me ask you that, because you just said something. When you go to, you went to league meetings and you got on a soapbox, did you have a fear of being blackballed or ostracized, or, you know, or here she comes again?
No, because it was very different then. We're talking about the 80s, mid-80s. I started working with the Pacers in 1983, and my ex-husband played in 1980. He graduated in 78, so now I'm telling you how old I am pretty much. But so it was a very different world and a very different league then, and it was more the teams leading the league as opposed to the mm-hmm. league leading the teams as we see now. So I wasn't concerned about that. And a lot of times I was asked to come and deliver, you know, do a presentation on developing relationships with your athletes, some of the programs that we were doing, to talk about that. And because that's what league meetings was a time for teams to share. And, you know, you pick up ideas. So I was asked to talk a lot about that, especially developing players' relationships and working with their extended families and their families and their friends and, you know, their management teams. And so that's kind of how that started. So I wasn't really thinking about saying the wrong thing. I remember one time Commissioner Stern coming in to listen to one of the presentations about getting players to do, because we were always known for how active our players were out in the community, and that fell under me also. And I was just, you know, telling them how I developed those relationships and why I thought our guys were so involved. And the main point was to get their buy-in. They had say-so. It wasn't just me dictating and telling them what to do. You know, I'd sit down with them, sit down with the captains, and we would come up with where their interest was and what that plan was going to be and how we were going to do things that year. So I got buy-in, and it was very interesting because afterwards Commissioner Thurn kind of went, well, that's nice, but I still think, you know, you just need to tell these guys what to do. It's like, yeah, that's why I'm saying, you know, and that attitude has changed. I think, you know, back then that was kind of how it was. You're coming in, they were thought of as these young guys, you know, they didn't know, we're going to tell them, you know, we're the boss kind of type thing. So it's interesting to see how it's evolved to today where the players have more say-so and are taking more interest in their journeys, you know, in professional athletics.
That's very interesting, the word evolve, because it's a lot of things that become standard, and we don't know that it's wrong. You're not wrong, but not for the right for the future. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You're talking about players not knowing they have a voice, and that's something I've always tried to tell the student athletes. You know, you have
mm-hmm.
a platform. And so when Kaepernick did the knee, I was like, it was like the heavens opened up. I said, you see what I'm saying? You know, I felt like
mm-hmm.
Noah in the Ark. I was like, I've been trying to tell you to prepare yourself. But speaking of evolution, one of your good friends is also one of my friends, is Janice Hilliard, Dr. Janice Hilliard.
Yes, Dr. J.
Yes, and she's like, oh, you can have my good friend on. Yay. And we talked a long time yesterday, matter of fact, because I'm going to sponsor her upcoming
mm-hmm.
workshop.
Her symposium. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so that being said, student or player development, you say student-athlete development when you're in college, but on the college level, I mean, on the pro level, you say player development. For those who, because I know Janice started out on the college, and then she went professional and worked in the league office. Can
mm-hmm.
you kind of say how, for people who are listening, they like the college side, but how can they, what's the difference, and can they be interchangeable?
And working with a student athlete versus a professional athlete, or just
yes, you
from
know,
college?
Isn't it similar? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I tell everybody, guys, all of us, whether it's, you know, you're an athlete or not, there's certain stages of development, human development,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you learn when you're in education. And I'm sure those that are working in education, whether you majored in education or not, at some point along the line, you've learned about that. And you'll, if you remember, it's like you're basically an adolescent until you're about 26, 27 years old. So the behavior
mm-hmm.
and the thought process of the athlete isn't that much different. It may vary based on their own personal experiences, their own personal life experiences, whatever team support system they have around them. So it will vary based on those things. But just like you're saying, just understanding, a lot of times the guys are coming to the pro level. Their goal is to play professional basketball. I want to play, you know, I want to be the next Michael Jordan, whoever, you know, LeBron, whoever they're looking up to these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they see. They don't see what's behind the scenes. So when you're trying to, you know, work with them and give them some guidance, like you're saying, you know, be prepared. They don't see it, and they just kind of go, yeah. But that's the same with our kids. If you're a parent, you know, when you're trying to bring up your your kids, and as a parent, you're trying to give them guidance and advice, and they're like going, yeah, you know, you're old, you don't understand, things are different now,
right,
and they, you know, but you don't really get it until you, you know, that last little part of the brain, that decision making, that discernment clicks in, where you go, ah, now I get it. And unfortunately, that's usually when they're almost 30 years old, and a lot of them, their careers are over.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of difference as far as the athlete and where they are mentally from college to professional. And I think that's where, if you're working with student athletes or if you're working with professional athletes in that development, that off-court development area, it's just important continue to provide as much support and as many resources and as much information to them, because they may not remember it right then. You know, they'll take it in, and like the rest of us, they apply it when it's necessary to apply it. You know, because you might give them something right then that doesn't really speak to them. And so it's just kind of, and they kind of store it away in this, you know, file cabinet in the brain. And then one day something happened and it's like, oh, I remember, you know, when she told me, you know, I need to do this or I need to do that or this resource, I can reach out here. So it's really no different than the rest of the world of us, you know, any of us growing up. That's just how we work as human beings. And I would say, you know, it's, the biggest difference is who's around them when they're in college and who's around them when they've reached that professional level, because that's their influences.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes. So speaking of who's around them, and you mentioned it, so I can say it. We're talking about, I don't necessarily believe in balance. I believe in ebb and flow. So, excuse me, who would you say your ebb and flow with your ex-husband being a professional athlete and your son, how was that balance, and did it cause any difficulties, or did it, was it a help as it relates to your moving up in the ranks in the front office?
No, I would say, well, by the time when I first started with the team, I was separated. And I'm not one who goes around and says, oh, I was married to a professional athlete. Oh, you know, this is who my brother is, or this is who my mother was. I'm not a name dropper person. And especially back then, I was one of those, you know, I am woman, hear me roar type people.
It's right, like, right.
You know,
Helen Reddy,
like,
that's right.
Yes, yes. So if I'm going to get this, it's going to be on my merit. You know, it doesn't matter
who my husband was.
It doesn't matter who my mama is, my daddy or whatever. I was just, you know, I didn't use those type of things. So that did not really affect anything. My son, I had him after... I'd only been there a couple of years, and so I was fortunate enough to work for a team and people who believed in family. And at the time, we had like 25, 30 people in the front office. You know, now they get like 300 people. So it's like we're doing all of this stuff that they're doing now with 25, 30 people and no technology. So sometimes I kind of scratch my head and go, why can't you get this done? I don't understand that. But so family was not only a big thing in the culture of the Indiana Pacers when I started, because Donnie and even before him, Bob Salyers, Ray Compton, those people that were there at my beginning, they encouraged it. Like they knew I could bring my son in, you know, if I needed to leave early to go pick him up from childcare. I brought him to the game. You know, everybody pitched in. I mean, there were times where we would spend the night in the office to get things done. Your colleagues became an extended family, and everybody pitched in to help everybody. So it wasn't a problem for me. I can't speak, you know, for other teams because every team is different. But I never really hurt anybody. I think it was because it was smaller and wasn't as huge as it is today. Everybody was more embracing and understanding and supportive. It's like, yeah, this is a 24-hour, you know, especially when you're working with the guys. I used to tell people my job was 24/7, 365. Like, I'm always on call. But even just if you're not working, just working with a professional team, you know, you are supposed to go to every game, every home game, you know. And as it got larger and you're taking on other events, teams are, you know, owning their arenas, and you're also promoting concerts and circuses and whatever else, you know, so you're selling tickets for that. And so it does become a year, you know, year-long thing. It used to make me laugh when people go, oh, it's the off-season, so what do you do now? Do you get another job? like, no, there's things to do in the off-season. So, yeah, we just happened. That didn't hinder. It didn't hinder at all.
I got one more thing to – you talking about the individuals you work with. And before we go to break, I do wanted to share this thought. That there was a scout for the Pacers that gave me great advice as a college intern. He gave me his business card in 1988. I tried to get him to hire me, and he was like, there's no money for internships. You need to do blank, blank, and blank. And then about almost 10 years later, I became athletic director, and I saw him again in Virginia at the PIT, and one of my ball players was trying to get a look at. And he gave me some good advice to give him. And that person was Mel Daniels.
I knew you were going to say that.
Think the world of him.
Yes, that was a huge loss when he passed away. He was a great mentor for me because he was there when, you know, he was one of the foundation stones of the Indiana Pacers back in the ABA as a player, and then continued working, you know, he was an assistant coach, as a matter of fact, when I started with the Pacers. So he was always there watching, had little words of wisdom for me, you know, pulling my coattails on different things. And when I started off, I was doing promotions because player development didn't exist. And like I said, that was kind of something nobody knew I was doing. But he was just always very supportive. He helped, you know, we were able to develop a great relationship. And when I started our alumni program, you know, he was a huge help in that, in getting those ABA guys to come back and staying in contact with the younger NBA guys throughout the years that I was there. And he was a great mentor to the players. He was just an all around great guy. Really missing.
And I have to be very honest, I had no idea about his lineage as a player, coach, any of that. I was just a student, sports information person, trying to figure out how to get my foot in the door. And I was passing out box scores. And he was, most people don't even look at you when you put the box score on the table. He would look and smile. And then, it's 1988. It's 2023. I don't know if I asked for the business card. But I kept that business card, and then when I saw him again years later, he was really proud of my elevation so quickly. I was 28. And it was years later, I was like, oh, my God, this is the guy that I know. He is really a legend.
He is. He's in the Hall of Fame. Yep, he is. I'm sure when he saw you, because there weren't many of us walking around.
Right.
You know, you didn't see many faces of color, and you didn't see many women, really. So I'm sure he took an interest in that because he was always, like I said, he was always a great mentor and would reach. He didn't really wait to be, you know, for you to reach out to him. If he saw you, he'd reach out to you. you know, and talk to you and let you know I'm here if I can help in any way.
And he did, in the sense of just knowing that I knew someone and to say that I can do this. And so, so when you said the Pacers, I was like, she's got to know this guy. And I was heartbroken.
Absolutely.
When I saw that he had passed. Oh, my.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
And talk some more about leadership and women in sports.
All righty. Looking forward to it.
Hi, my name is Candy Waller, and I'm the president of the Seawall Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization established to enhance the transferable skills of student athletes. We are currently launching a media training course to prepare student athletes to effectively engage with the press and the public. To learn more, email us at info@seawallfoundation.org. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
This is Alva Champion Amaker of ANA Athletic Consulting and Vigilant Safety Training Center. My investment to become a member of the Advanced Academy is one of the best decisions I've made in my business and personal growth journey. Working with Monique has provided the network to connect and collaborate with some phenomenal women and leaders, exposed me to literature for growth, and opportunities to share my skill sets and knowledge. Her candid approach in the one-on-one sessions make me more accountable for taking the necessary steps toward my advanced success. Thank you, Monique, and I appreciate you.
Why do colleges support student athletes pursuing every profession except professional sports? Why are they treated as just students when they're athletes, knowing that they need help surviving the lights? I'm Tawana Smith, and as a former Division I and pro athlete and now best-selling author, I've created a transition system specifically for student athletes called Surviving the Lights. For more information, visit www.survivingthelights.com to learn how we can change the game together.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, here in the Chattanooga Garden with Smith & Blooms in Athletics and Sports. Well, Kathy, I want to go back a little bit talking about advice, talk about male giving great advice. So along those lines, what advice do you have for the next generation who want to advance and to break into this business?
Professional sports is very difficult, in my opinion, to break into because it's still each team is it's individual business, and I still equate them to like the mom and pop corner store because they're run by families. So my advice is networking. You know, you've got to get in and meet people and understand that networking goes two ways. It's not just about what the person you reach out to can give to you and provide you, but how you can support what they're doing. And so I always say, if you want to get into sports experience, especially if you want to go to the pro level, a lot of it, they look for experience. And so if you're in college, go to the athletic department and see what you can do. If they're not taking internships, how you can volunteer. It might just be one aspect, one small thing, but it's just one step at a time. It builds into, you know, something more the more you stay with it. To the ADs, you know, because there's different things. Learn the different aspects of sports. It's more than, as we know, it's more than just the athletes that are out on the courts and on the field. But I don't know how many people realize all the different business aspects there is in sports. And I think going to your college athletic department is a great way to learn and just talk to the different people that are working there and learn what their path has been and learn what they're doing, because that'll help you kind of start formulating what you may like to focus on. Because it's one thing to apply for a job and say, you know, I'm interested in working for your team, but not know exactly what it is you want to do. And that's a big mm-hmm. mistake that a lot of people make. I know when we would interview for interns or even for jobs, and people would say, I just want to work in sports. And I go, what are you interested in? They couldn't tell me specifically, you know. They didn't really know what the different areas were. And so it's like you just can't say just I want to get in the door and just figure it out. And it's like, you know, try to figure it out before. And the way you do that is volunteering and getting involved in your community, in your school. Different communities have the sports authorities that are looking for people mm-hmm. to volunteer. So that's another outlet for you. But, you know, it's high schools, athletic programs, AAU programs, anything that will give you experience. Minor league sports, I can't tell you how many people I hired from minor leagues to work in the pros. You know, don't discount that, because I look at that as like they don't have money that the major leagues have. They don't have the staff size that the major leagues have. So you get to wear a lot of hats on that level. And you learn a lot of different things that are transferable onto, you know, into the pro world. And you may not work in, an array of areas, but you get an idea of how it all works together, because it does all work together. You just can't be so focused on one area that you don't understand how it all interlocks.
Mm-hmm. So, what are your current initiatives that you got going on?
Well, that's an interesting question, Monique. I tell everyone I go through these phases. I kind of watch what's going on. I've been working with athletes that have retired.
Mm-hmm.
I've been gone from the Pacers for almost 15 years now, about 14 years. So some of the athletes that I worked with across those 25 years reach out to me, usually when they're in their late 30s, 40s, because things, like I said, start to click, and they go, oh, I remember when you said this, or, hey, remember mm-hmm. this? You know, can you help me with that? So I try to help them with some of the things that they're transitioning into, whether it's trying to provide resources for them to help them with some of the things they want to do, because I say, I'm sort of like a, you know, Jill of all trades, master of none sort of type thing, mm-hmm. where you pick up a lot of contacts and resources through the years. So based on what it is they're wanting to do, I try to coach them on that path. So I've been doing that. And then I started doing it, reaching out to college and high school student athletes.
Mm.
Because the more I've been out here, it's like, well, we need to start this a lot earlier. And even I think it's like anything else, you start planting the seeds very early. So that's kind of mm-hmm. where I am now. My focus has really been on value education. That comes just from my background as an educator, the short time that I did teach, realizing that kids don't know what their values are.
Mm-hmm.
So starting off, well, let's discover what your values are, because that's where all your decision-making comes from. Everything comes from what you value. So just I've kind of started focusing on that with athletes. Let's figure out what your values are. Let's talk about how that affects your decision-making and what you do and how you live. And then if you are interested in going into that next level, how that affects your brand. So we talk about branding and social media and, you know, what you're doing off your court or off the field, and how all of that affects that ultimate dream you have of playing on the ultimate level. And even when you reach that level, how do you, you know, maintain that brand? What does that brand mean? It's
just not a Nike logo. And I used to tell the guys that were interested in endorsements. And he's like, KJ, can you help me get these endorsements? And I was like, well, you have to do the work. I mean, everybody wants the endorsements that Michael Jordan had and, you know, that LeBron has or Shaq has. But it's like, do you actually think their agents were on the phone calling people going, hey, I got this guy. You know, it's like, no, their phones were ringing off the hook, and it was based on what they were doing, you know, their commitment to their trade, to their profession, to their career, their hard work, which showed, and then what they were doing off the court, how they were handling themselves, you know, conducting themselves, because you got to remember, you know, once you take an endorsement, you represent that company, so you got to make sure that your values, again, match theirs, you know, so we just... That's where I focused, and hoping that that's laying a foundation. So as they continue to move through their careers, you know, towards whatever dreams they have, because it's not just something to be used in athletics; it can be used, you know, in any aspects of their lives. So I started just focusing there. When I first started off, it was life skills. So it was all kind of things. today, you know, we're gonna do a lesson on, you know, budgeting and, you know, because those are all the different things I did with the guys helping, you know, because so many guys didn't know how to read a balance sheet, didn't know what a balance sheet was. You know, like you were saying, W-2, I had guys come to me, you know, rookies, and go, KJ, I didn't get paid. I didn't get my paycheck. So-and-so got a paycheck. Is this, you know, where we get a paycheck today? And I was like, yeah. Did you sign something so that your check is going somewhere else? Is it being automatically deposited? Is it, you know, because when they come, a lot of times when they come to the pro, well, especially now, I'm sure all the time when they come, everything's already set up for them. Early on, I can help guys kind of set things up. But now everything's already in place for them, so by the time we get them, we don't have to do those things anymore. But I had guys didn't know that they had signed something for their paychecks to go to a financial person. You know, so it's like, you know, you gotta read what you're signing, guys. Just, you know, you can't trust. You can't trust everybody. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. You can't, you know, at some point you've gotta take ownership of you, because like you used to say, and what you used to tell them, it's like my big thing was, which wasn't real popular with the agents, but I used to say, you pay them to work for you. You know, you do not work for them. They are there to advise. They are there to give you some direction. But in order for you to know if it's good advice, you've got to take some ownership and do your own research, you know, ask questions, you know. So that wasn't real popular with the agents, because that's, you know, a lot of times it's like, don't worry, you just play the game and we'll take care of everything else. And like, you know, that's why so many guys, when that agent isn't there anymore, why so many of them go broke. You know, I tell people it's not about, because they're like buying jewelry and cars and homes. That might be part of it, but a lot of it is they just don't know how to manage it because they've never been taught. So I think that's real important.
Well, I think this was an important conversation to have at this time and space with Nate Image and Likeness, and the conversation starts early. And so definitely for those that are listening, reach out to Kathy Jordan. And I just want to say thank you for joining me today. And I want to thank my engineer for being my eyes and ears. So
great engineer.
Yes. So join us next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're out of time. And so everybody have a significant rest of the day.